The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight on the Veritas Project, we have a guest whose journey through the world of natural medicine has led to groundbreaking revelations and a quest for the truth that challenges everything we thought we knew about health and disease. Daniel Roitas, with over a decade of experience as a lecturer and senior lecturer in natural medicine across Australia, always felt a lingering doubt about the mainstream medical narratives he was teaching. In early 2020, this doubt transformed into a life-altering quest for the truth when he encountered doctors questioning established health paradigms. Fueled by curiosity and a desire for deeper understanding, Daniel embarked on a rigorous journey of self-discovery, reevaluating everything he knew about the human body, health, disease, and the very nature of reality itself. This path led him to startling and paradigm-shifting realizations, culminating in his decision to leave academia and dedicate himself fully to his platform, Humanly. In his recently published book, Can You Catch a Cold? Untold History and Human Experiments, Daniel explores the profound flaws in the conventional wisdom surrounding colds and flu. Drawing on over 200 contagion studies and more than 1,000 citations, his work challenges the long-held belief that these illnesses are spread through coughing, sneezing, and physical contact. Instead, he delves into historical records, past pandemics, human psychology, and meticulously documented experiments to present a compelling argument that our understanding of infectious diseases is fundamentally incomplete. Prepare to be captivated as Daniel Roitas takes us on a journey through the untold history of disease, the failures of scientific experiments, and the alternative explanations that might just change the way we think about health forever. Join us as we uncover the truth behind the myths and explore the potential for a new understanding of wellness that is simpler, more natural, and profoundly impactful. This is an interview you won't want to miss. Stay tuned as we dive deep into the world of health, science, and the pursuit of truth. Daniel Roitas is coming up next. Welcome to the Veritas Project. I'm your host, Mel Hostelrich. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with me, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. Your thoughts and ideas are always appreciated. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program. And directly from somewhere in Southeast Asia, I'd like to welcome Daniel Roitas. Hello, Daniel, and welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mel. Absolute pleasure to speak with you. I've followed your work for many years, and I'm thrilled that you've offered me an opportunity to come and speak with you on your podcast. Great to be here.
My pleasure. That's an honor to hear. I didn't know that you followed my work. A lot of people find me and they want to come over, but it's even better when they know who we are. So the book, what a great book. And this is something we've been discussing for a while, but we haven't done a full interview about what I've been suspecting for even before the, I hate to use the word, the pandemic, but give us a little bit of your background. How did you get into all of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have a background in health. So I am a naturopath by training and a nutritionist, and I've done a number of other qualifications in a range of different health disciplines. But they're my two main focuses, is naturopathic and nutritional medicine. I studied my undergraduate degree, I think I started around 2006. And when I graduated, worked in clinical practice for a while, and then eventually moved into academia and became a senior lecturer at colleges and a university here in Australia. Worked in that capacity for over a decade and recently resigned my position in late 2002 because I just couldn't ethically continue teaching the curriculum because I didn't believe in it anymore. But in early 2020, I heard some doctors talking about this idea that disease isn't transmissible. And I thought, this is really interesting that respected doctors would start coming out publicly saying that germs don't cause disease. But it wasn't the first time I'd heard that, actually. I had heard this idea posed to me in my undergraduate degree all the way back in 2006, 2007 in one of my immunology lectures. And at the time, I dismissed that idea because I thought germ theory has been proven. This is well-established science, so they must be wrong. These kooky naturopaths and alternative medicine practitioners must be wrong. So I went forward actually thinking that there was a bit of a duality that existed. So some people refer to the antithesis of germ theory as the terrain theory. So I went forward thinking that there was a duality that existed, that germs could make you sick, but only if you didn't take care of yourself and your immune system became weak, and then germs would come along and take hold and cause illness in you. And it was only in late 2020 when I heard this idea being posed that it clicked with me, that what I'd heard all those years before, there was probably some truth to it. Now, in my position as a lecturer, I was doing a lot of public speaking, a lot of presentations for professional bodies and associations and things like that, and even just in my professional life privately. So I would do educational presentations, webinars, seminars for clinicians all around the world. I knew that this question was going to come up, and I thought, because it's such a hot topic, I better go and look at this in more detail, dot my I's and cross my T's. So I started looking at all of the evidence to support this idea that disease is transmissible. And what I found really shocked me. It's there was an absence of evidence. So now I'm not saying that the evidence isn't there, but I could not find any evidence to demonstrate that disease is passed between people. So I started accumulating a lot of different scientific papers and medical journal papers, and I built a repository of these documents. And a colleague of mine, his name's Roman Bistrianic, he wrote a really great book called Dissolving Illusions. He actually wrote to me via email and said, look, man, I know you've got this repository of information, all these dozens, hundreds of experiments. You should really write a book about that. And the rest is history. That's what inspired me to write the book. And I compiled all of those experiments and studies into Can You Catch a Cold, which we released in late March 2024.
I think it was Dr. Andrew Kaufman who really put me on the right track in learning more about this. I've heard it before, but the exosomes and the fact that, you know, germ theory, it's not the germs, it's the terrain. Many other doctors that I've had on my other program, Sanita, said that some of them are no longer with us. So I'm glad you're here to discuss this. But in the introduction of your book, you mentioned Amu Haji's story. Hope I pronounced that right. How does this case challenge the conventional understanding of germ theory?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually. When the pandemic started, around the maybe mid-2020, these articles started getting published in mainstream newspapers, and they were talking about the dirtiest men in the world. And I thought, how interesting that we're in the middle of a pandemic and we're being told that there's a virus in the environment that can come out from the shadows and infect you and cause illness and death. On one hand, they're telling us this, but then on the other hand, they're publishing these papers about people like Amu Haji, who was given the title of the world's dirtiest man, and they're saying that he lives in absolute squalor, hadn't had a shower for decades, lived in a rundown shack on the outskirts of town in the Middle East. drank water out of an oily, rusty can. He ate roadkill, like squashed porcupine that he found on the side of the road. Did nothing to really promote his health. Did nothing in the way of maintaining good personal hygiene to protect himself from so-called germs in the environment. Yet he lived, I think, into either his 80s or 90s. And when doctors came and investigated, and they essentially ran a barrage of tests on him, they couldn't find anything wrong with him. He was in perfect health. They couldn't find any disease-causing germs either, even though he was completely filthy and covered in dirt, sleeping in basically a slum. He was fine. It was only until after he had a shower that the local townspeople came to him and literally forced him. They dragged him down to the local river and gave him a bath. He died within a few months. So they put this information out into the mainstream media, which really does go against everything we've been taught about germs. And that's how I started the book, was just to put this idea forward to people that there are people out there who do not practice any personal hygiene the way that we know it. They don't eat a healthy diet. They don't live in a house and have access to good sanitation, yet they're incredibly healthy. It goes against everything that we've been taught to believe about health.
It was Dr. Harvey Biggleson. I remember now. He passed away. He was arrested for the things that he said. He was a full-blown MD. And they just took the license, the livelihood away, because he used to say all these things. But I remember he told me during our last interview, you know, people who take showers every single day, I know you want to be clean. This is what society tells you, that you must take one or two showers a day. But he says, I don't take showers every single day, not because I want to be a Namu Haji, but you do it every few days because there are oils in your skin, the largest organ of your body, that protect you from a lot of things. What's your take on this, on taking showers every day, and also the questioning, long-held beliefs that people have? It's very difficult to shatter people's paradigms sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I don't claim to know the answers. I don't claim that what I'm saying is right. I'm simply asking the questions, and that's how I structured the book. That's the way that I wrote it, was to ask questions rather than make claims and statements. So I basically just put the information there for people to look at, and they can come up with their own conclusions. Now, in regards to personal hygiene, I mean, this is another thing. People can make their own decisions about what they want to do. However, I think it's interesting that human beings are the only creatures on the face of the earth that think it's necessary to lather their body in toxic chemicals twice, sometimes three times a day, and incessantly wash all of their body parts, thinking that they're dirty. They're under this assumption that they're a dirty creature and they have to be clean all the time. There are oils on our skin, first and foremost. We don't necessarily know all of the functions that these oils have. Yes, they probably have a barrier function mechanism, and they also help with absorbing and utilizing light and energy from the sun. So, you know, the mainstream would say that we store vitamin D in the oil on our skin, and if you are washing it off, you may have vitamin D deficiency if you wash too much of the oil off. So even the mainstream acknowledges that this can be a problem. Then you're also faced with this issue of what you put on your skin absorbs transdermally, so it goes through your skin into your bloodstream. Now, there's a bit of a saying in the health profession, or certainly the natural health profession, that if you wouldn't put it in your mouth or you wouldn't eat it, then don't put it on your skin, because your skin has an amazing capacity to absorb things that you put onto it. So if you're putting toxic substances, toxic chemicals onto your skin 2-3 times a day, you're possibly absorbing this stuff into your system, and it's going through your body and storing in tissue systemically, and that can be a problem. Now, I mean, if you look at many animals in the animal kingdom, they're not constantly having showers. Yes, some animals go to water, like a duck, for example. You know, they like being around water, and you'll see them wash themselves in water. There are obviously other animals that do that, but there's other animals that don't like water. So if you think about a goat, for example, they're self-cleaning. They'll lose hair and naturally clean themselves, but they don't like to be in water. Humans tend to like water, I think, but we're drawn to it. We live along coastlines and we like to be in the ocean and things like that. It's okay to wash yourself. I don't have any issues with this, but maybe water is enough. I'm not convinced that we need to be scrubbing all the oil off our skin with soap and applying these harsh chemicals to our skin several times a day.
Not only that, but how many people wear sunscreens? And a lot of the sunscreens, if they're not organic, they go through your skin. There's petroleum-based, propylene glycol, and they could, it's a list of 100 chemicals. But one interesting thing I've found recently is that the 5 top countries in the world that use sunscreens are Australia, in order, Australia, New Zealand, Denmark, United States, and Germany. And guess what the countries with the highest preponderance of skin cancer are? Australia, New Zealand, Denmark, United States, and Germany. Do you see a connection between these?
Yeah, absolutely. I've looked at this in some detail, and it's interesting because at the university I was working at many years ago, we had one of the leading experts on vitamin D research in the country. He came across from another university and gave a talk to the students there. And he was essentially saying that the people who get the least sun exposure have the highest rates of skin cancer, which goes against everything that we're told. We're told that the more exposure to sun you get, the greater your risk of getting skin cancer. So he was saying that the people who are most at risk are office workers who get very little sun. And if they do get sun, it may be once or twice a year when they go to the beach and get burnt. And the people who have the least risk of sun cancer are people who are working out in the sun. So tradespeople like builders or farmers, they have the lowest rates of skin cancer. So yeah, it does challenge this idea that getting excessive sun exposure is going to increase your risk of skin cancer. And the research on sunscreen is certainly mixed when it comes to skin cancer risk. Some research says that it increases your risk. Some says that it decreases your risk. I would lean towards the concept or the notion that it may increase your risk. But in saying that, we also have to think about the other things that we're doing, which may have an impact on the way that sun affects our body. So they've done some research. I think it was at a university in South Africa, maybe in the 70s or 80s, where they took a bunch of people and they took them up onto a roof of one of the buildings on the campus there. One group of people who had been eating a diet rich in, I think it was carotenoids, so like antioxidants in various fruits and vegetables, and the other group hadn't. And they found that the group that had been eating these brightly colored fruits and vegetables, and they may have even supplemented them with some of these carotenoids, they didn't burn when they went into the sun. And the group that didn't get those things, they burnt relatively quickly. So we think of the risk as being something that's like a direct exposure to the sun that's the problem. But it could be something that's wrong with our diet. It could be the fact that we're not getting enough sun exposure, so that when we do go in the sun, we react more adversely. It could be that we're incessantly washing off the oil off our skin, which provides a protective barrier, and it may act as an interface between us and the outside world. There's so many things that we need to consider. I lean towards the idea that sunscreen probably plays a role, and there is some suggestions of this in the literature, that applying some of these chemicals causes cancer. And they've admitted this in the mainstream. So, yeah, we have to be careful with anything that we put on our skin. And one of the reasons why people love to lather themselves in sunscreen is because they're scared of the sun. Yet the sun is the thing that gives life to every single living.
thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.